The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so I guess I'll start off with, the recent trends in crime in Manhattan. Your office gave me some numbers comparing things to last year, this time, 2 years ago, and showing that things are down, which is certainly a good thing. What would you attribute the progress to?
This encouraging data, I think, is attributable to a number of factors. You know, first, it's our collaboration with the NYPD, focusing on people who are driving crime, really focusing on the people who, for example, the gun violence, people who are the drivers of violence. It's also collaborations with community partners, so that when we are getting gains, we're also sort of collaborating with communities so that those public safety gains are enduring. And it's really following the intelligence and data and driving our resources to the places where we think it'll be most impactful. And we see it, across the board, everything in Manhattan trending downward. And so we know we have more work to do to get back to pre-pandemic levels. And so encouraged by this, and we plan to redouble our efforts.
I want to talk about crime specifically, violence specifically in the subway system. Even though things are down, there's still this perception issue that, the NYPD, the mayor, you are having to deal with. And, people still don't feel safe in a lot of ways. And especially when they hear, that someone was arrested and then, in some cases, let right back out on the street by your office in many of those cases, that doesn't make them feel safe. What would you say to their concerns?
Well, I would say we've got to look at the facts of the matter, and particularly in violent cases, we are holding people accountable literally every single day. And whether that's sort of in the back end of the case with appropriate sentences and incarceration for violence, or the front end of the case. And so we are putting out press releases. We're doing availabilities like this, encouraging people when I'm in, public forums and spaces to ask us about the work, because oftentimes when people are painting with a broad brush, they're not hearing or learning about the particular facts of a matter. And when we talk about them and they know the facts, they're really encouraged by the work we're doing and the strides we're getting. So we're doing it every day. And we know about violence on the trains and also above ground, because we're seeing those cases. In addition to, of course, living here and working here, and I'm responsible for, 1,500 employees coming and going safely to work.
A lot of police officials have been talking a lot in the last couple of weeks, especially about recidivism. And a number that I heard yesterday was last year, the NYPD arrested 500 some odd people. Those 500 some odd people were arrested like around 7,000 times specifically for retail theft. And a lot of those cases, these people were being let out and committing more violent crimes, breaking into people's homes, threatening them with weapons and stuff like that. What are your thoughts on recidivism and some of the things that these officials are saying?
So, we're very focused on recidivism. I'll focus you on the Manhattan data. I mean, you just talked about citywide data, and I think oftentimes they get lumped together. The Manhattan data is often different. I mean, we're driving the citywide decline in Manhattan. Our data is really standing, showing significant decreases, particularly in the violent crimes. Shootings down 38% the last 2 years, homicides down 21%. In terms of the specific issue you talked about, retail theft, recidivism is a very significant issue in Manhattan. We see that about 18% of the people arrested for shoplifting in Manhattan account for about 45% of the arrests. And so we've been focusing on that population. We've been coordinating. I've met in the last couple of weeks with a number of commanding officers to focus on the people who are repeatedly engaging in illegal conduct, and particularly in the shoplifting space. We have cases that will address an underlying issue. So if it's a drug addiction or something like that, that we will do that. And we see that approach working and addressing and reducing recidivism. And for others, traditional incarceration is something we use. What I would add to that, which is really important, which we're doing here in Manhattan, is in the retail space, we're following the money. This is what I've done throughout my career as a federal prosecutor and a state, at the state attorney general's office, is following the money. And so we have a number of investigations where we are looking at who's benefiting from the shoplifting, where the goods are being fenced to. And we think as those investigations mature, that will also go a long way, complementing what we're already doing. If you're shoplifting to sell something and the places where you're selling it are being held accountable and those people are no longer outlets for that, that's going to help with our retail theft. So we're doing all of the above, focusing on recidivism and following the money.
Yeah. How would you assess your relationship with the NYPD?
We work every single day with NYPD. I mean, almost 1,000 touch points per day, probably between the 500 plus ADAs we have here, and in touch with the senior leaders there, whether it's the commissioner or whether it's the commanders of Manhattan or from Manhattan South. So I think we have very solid working relationships, very very open lines of communication. So for example, talking about the people who are driving, whether it's gun violence or the people who are engaging repeatedly in recidivism or shoplifting. And I think that line of communication, that's something that I've been in, started in law enforcement in 2003. I think that line of communication between prosecutors and law enforcement is so key, and it's something that we're doing here, communicating essentially on a daily basis.
Things have certainly gotten political at times during your tenure. I want to ask you about earlier this year, Republicans in the state Senate sent a letter to Governor Hochul asking to remove you from office. And they said that, I'm quoting here, you thumb your nose at crime victims, turn your back on police, and selectively prosecute criminals for political reasons, and that you're failing at performing the basic duties of your position. What's your reaction there? And why do you think there's such a disconnect with some politicians and others in how you're handling the office?
Well, I think you said the key word there. I think politics, and I don't traffic in that. I'm focused on facts and law. That's what I've been doing since 1999 when I graduated from law school. And I think you can just look at the results we're getting, the collaboration, 38% decline in shootings during my 2-year tenure, 21% decline in homicides. The fact that Manhattan is down in all the index crimes. And so that's what I'm focused on, the law, the facts, the people involved. And it's sort of disturbing to me that folks would try to sort of politicize what are really fundamentally important issues. And you mentioned victims. One thing I'm proudest about is our expansion of our victim services. Our crisis response to survivors and victims of crime are up 500% during my tenure. Those are the statistics we should be talking about. People who need our services, need government to function. We shouldn't be talking about letter writing campaigns and things like that. We should be talking about actual services we deliver. So I'm very proud of that 500% increase in crisis interventions and services to victims. That's the record. That, as well as some of the data we've been talking about, that's where I want to focus. Obviously, always room for improvement, but we cannot play politics with people's safety.
I want to circle back real quick to the perception thing. What would be your direct message? Let's say you've got someone in your office right now, an average New Yorker. They take the subway every day. They hear about some of the things that go on, that people in a lot of cases are being let out without bail. What would you say to their concerns?
So I don't have to do this as a hypothetical, right? We had a forum on the Lower East Side recently. We had one on East Harlem. We have done them in the Upper West Side, really all corners of the borough, speaking with constituents, telling them what we're doing, but equally as important, listening to their concerns. I was at a meeting with a youth group the other day, and they told me about some concerns And in response, I came back and we sent out some folks, our community navigators, to a particular train stop to intervene and engage with unhoused persons. So we're doing this every single day, whether it's our community partnerships unit, whether it's myself personally, engaging with everyday New Yorkers. And look, they are telling me their concerns. Some of them we've talked about in the transit crime and shoplifting. And I've told you what we're doing in response to that. And others are saying, like, hey, we saw the recent case you did on wage theft. Please keep doing that. That's fundamental because I'm going to work and I want to be paid an honest dollar for an honest day. Keep doing the tenant protection work. And in communities that have been beset by gun violence, I don't even have to say the statistics. They said, why are you telling us that? We live here every single day. We know that. And I think for me, particularly being raised in and living in, you know, part of the borough that is historically seen more of that than others, I also know that too. So, of course, I benefit from hearing from people, but I'm moving around the borough every day in informal and informal ways, getting real-time, very helpful feedback from New Yorkers.
Hmm. I want to ask you about the case that you put out a press release on today about the former head of the Administration for Children's Services, a guilty plea for stealing gift cards meant for foster kids. What kind of message does it send when you have the leader of a group that is meant to care for these kids, get them on a path to having a more of a permanent family solution, and that person is stealing from them? What kind of message does that send?
Well, conduct is repugnant. And the message I hope it sends is that we're watching. I've been a public corruption prosecutor on the federal level and on the state level. This is work that speaks directly to me. I believe in the power of government to deliver services and aid people. And then when people who have roles where they are working in the public trust, and it's supposed to be, in this example, providing services to young people, but instead are stealing from young people. This is something that we're focused on, particularly in these times of a tight fiscal budgets, making sure that money that is set aside and allocated to go to a social service program is getting there and is not being diverted by those in positions of trust.
I'm curious what role you and your office could potentially play in going after illegal cannabis dispensaries. I know you have this program in your office. This has turned into a huge issue with Manhattan, you know, seemingly at the epicenter, hundreds, if not thousands, of these places, and with a minuscule amount of licensed shops. Is there really any more that your office can do to not only find these places but shut them down?
So we're working hard on this. As you said, this is a very significant issue. Late last year, we prosecuted an owner of 11 stores, really viewed that as sort of a template prosecution for what we're going to do going forward. One person, owning 11 illegal stores and resolving that, we are looking to scale up that kind of work. Again, as I mentioned in the shoplifting context, sort of following the money. Seeing that there was someone who owned several stores and focusing there. So we'll be doing more of that. We've also been engaging with real estate leaders in this town you cannot have one of these stores unless you have a leasehold. And so really talking to commercial landlords about oversight and then also talking to some other regulators in the space. And I think the combination of the criminal enforcement that we've started along with the regulatory structure becoming more mature and more legitimate businesses opening up with permits. And then the discussion that's happening at the state level with the legislature now about giving the city more power to do nuisance abatement, civil. I think all of that together, I'm hopeful that we'll be in a very different place, perhaps as soon as the middle of the year, but certainly by the end of the year.
So there is a bill, which you may have just alluded to, in Albany to try to give the city, local municipalities, the power to shut these places down. Would you support that?
I am in support of addressing this harm. And of course, I'm mostly focused on criminal enforcement as the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, and we're building those cases. I think as a complement to that, having an administrative structure, which is getting the permits out the door, is important. And I think having local places, you know, obviously I'm most concerned about the city here, having the authority to take steps to engage in nuisance abatement is also a very important piece of the puzzle.
Last question. I would be remiss if I did not ask you about the criminal case involving former President Trump, scheduled to begin next week. And just today, I'm sure you're aware, denied the request to delay the trial. I realize you've not really commented on this publicly, but, you know, the fact is this is a very much talked about case. It's on the minds of a lot of people. What would you say to this latest attempt to delay and the judge's decision?
I'm not going to address anything about this case outside of court filings or the courtroom.
I'm curious, why wouldn't you talk about this publicly, with it being on the minds of so many people and playing such a big role, you know, beyond the city?
The rules that govern me as an officer of the court and the code of professional responsibility is where I look to. Extrajudicial statements this close to trial is something that under the rules I'm going to not do, and sort of, you know, point you to our filings and our statements in court.
Gotcha. All right. Well, DA Bragg, I really appreciate the time today. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.